Welcome to the Living Farms podcast, where voices from around the world come together to shape the future of biodynamic agriculture.
So I'm very happy to continue with our Living Farms podcast. This is very important for us because we can reach a lot of people, a lot of young people that are out there and wanting to know more about the different work of the sections, and in the case of agriculture, how does agriculture connect with the different activities and the different sections of the School of Spiritual Science at the Goetheanum. So today I'm incredibly happy to have with us Philipp Röpke. He's a co-leader of the pedagogical section at the Goetheanum, at the School of Spiritual Science. And he studied German language and philosophy and worked on that area for some time. And he also started doing work in the Waldorf School in Colmar. And he has been the co-leader of the section since the year 2020. So I'm very happy to have you here, Philipp. Thank you for accepting this invitation. So it is very interesting because I actually started working in agriculture and biodynamic agriculture in a Waldorf school. So I started selling lettuces and other vegetables to the school before even knowing that what it meant to be a Waldorf school, and I was invited to teach there. I was given even the agriculture course, and this is how I started. So my early beginnings in agriculture, in biodynamic agriculture, were really at the Waldorf School. And there it was very beautiful because not only are you inviting a lot of students to the garden, but also the teachers get closer. And sometimes the teachers that have to make this part of the subject tell me, oh, but I don't know anything about agriculture, please help me. And the other way around, sometimes we have teachers and consultants and advisors and trainers that are working very close with biodynamic farmers, and they ask us, well, it's not easy to bring anthroposophy into the teachings, or even if we know about anthroposophy, it's hard to bring it, and we don't know how to do it. It's such a vast knowledge that it's hard. So I think bridging this is very important, not only knowing maybe a few tips on how to start bringing this to the farmers, but also how to do it in a way that it is, let's say, innovative for this new 100 years of agriculture. And so I thought of inviting Philipp, who is in immersed in pedagogy, and I've seen him giving lectures, and I feel he has this very beautiful touch. So my first question, Philipp, would be, what was your experience in the Waldorf schools in relation to the garden and the gardening teachers? Did you have any anecdotes about that?
Well, as a student, I remember how we cultivated what is now the English name, potimarron, we say it in French. It's a wonderful yellow curcuma. And then not only to cultivate it, but also to cook it and to eat it and to get this experience that you are not disconnected from where the vegetables come from, but you did something to help them grow.
Yes, this is a very beautiful connection. When you start from the seed, you put it in the ground as a child, and you follow all the development of the plant, and then you have flowers or leaves or fruits, and you can cook them, and it really tastes different.
Yeah but today we have the problem that so many children and adults have no possibility to get in connection to nature at all. So if you have only a lesson in school, it's very limited. It needs to be much deeper. We need in the schools, in the kindergartens, because You did mention I was actually for 20 years kindergarten teachers while working with small one. It's very important to live in nature. And I had a wonderful experience in South Africa in the school, Waldorf school in Cape Town. They have a huge nature area where they don't have lessons, gardening lessons, but the students go there, small ones and adolescents. They are two teachers who are more like coaches. And now the children, and they can do what they want, actually. They can construct houses, they can cultivate vegetables, make fire, dig a hole to have create a lake. Or it's a living space. And so the teachers are, however, directing a little bit, but it's a wonderful place to get much deeper connection. And then the motivation comes from the children and the young people, and you don't teach them somehow. I think this is a fantastic example, which many could imitate.
Yes, for people growing up in the rural areas, this used to be the life. You would go out and play with your pigs and feed the cows, and then play in the mud, submerge yourself in the mud. But this is becoming less common now in a certain way. But I heard from a friend of mine something very beautiful. He said a lot of people migrated to the cities, and now people are migrating back from the cities to the land. And this is also a beautiful gesture. And recently we have been talking in different moments with people, and we say, well, what a beautiful experience to connect with the earth. As one of the first experiences in your life, to really feel what it is to put your bare feet in the cold mud or the warm water, etc. And this is how you start the connection between the earth and the human being. This is so important to cultivate this.
Yeah, because the feeling of being disconnected leads actually to the destruction or to a destructive behavior of the human being towards nature. Because if you don't know it, if you don't love it, if it's not like a partner, like beings who are there, the stones, the plants, the animals, then you don't care about it.
This is so true.
How can we cultivate deeper feelings of partnership, of friendship with nature?
Yes, this is such an important question, because if you feel like it is part of you, or it's part of your history, and when we study anthroposophy, that's what we start unveiling. We start discovering that the earth and the human being evolved together. And when you play as a child, you kind of know this without really studying it. You're just living it. You feel the pulse of the earth alive, and this makes you so happy. It's such a happy moment when you go out to nature and you discover that it's friendly, that's not necessarily threatening. Sometimes when you teach agriculture to the young children, they don't want to put their hands in the soil because they didn't have experience of this. They don't want to smell it, even to work with it, because they feel separated, as you were saying, and this is so important. But then as you grow up and you decide, let's say, to work as a farmer, you start, you are more developed, you finish probably your 21st year of life or around that time. And then you start studying agriculture. And sometimes we develop and we practice a lot with agriculture, all the techniques, all the hard work that is involved. But then we also now separate from the human being. We don't know what is the human being and what really its connection. So this is also something that happens. And we put so much of our effort when we are training farmers or training other people that are around the farm into the farming itself. But very little time do we spend talking about the human being. And I know that in pedagogy, there are some pillars of this brought by Rudolf Steiner. What is the image of the human being? What is a human being? How is it connected not only to the earth, but to the other human beings? And I also wanted to, I invited you because I know that in pedagogy, you develop this image of the human being in quite an interesting way that could be helpful for farmers to share it with other farmers. Can you speak a little bit about this? How do you introduce this in a way that makes sense and it's also friendly and not so threatening when we feel this is so complex? How can I bring it? How can I explain it or share it?
Yeah, in water schools, we try to actually learn from you, farmers, or say Goetheanistic researchers, to really go to observation. And as in your farm and in your gardening work, you need really to be open to what's happening in your garden, on your fields, with the plants and animals, and really to observe and then direct your action through what you observed. And then the thing is that when you have concepts about or ideas about the human being, the plants, the animals, your perspective is sharpened. You see more. So you need somehow to make progress in both directions, to observation and also to thinking about the human being, about, in your case, the plants and animals. So it's not that anthroposophy is for us just a sum of ideas or a theory, an ideology we have to learn or to get connected with. No, it's actually not. It's a tool to observe better the human being. And we try to do it in such a way that we make always, we go from observation to a more conceptual effort, and then from this we go back to the observation. So I would guess in your case as a farmer could be good to have the same gesture. I think not to learn about anthroposophy as a sum of ideas or so on. No, but I think it can be very interesting to use it as a tool to sharpen your observation, to get more connected to actually your farm as an organism, to the plants, the animals, and the soil, and the elements of nature. And then it's interesting, I think.
That's a very good way of putting it, because in the farm, some farms break one moment of the week to study, like teachers do on Thursdays or in many schools. And then you have to think what to study and how to study. Of course, there are so many themes around agriculture, but I think the theme of the human being is crucial, and how we bring it, knowing a little bit of its history, how it came about in relationship to the earth, and then start building from it. Because when you connect the fact that the human being is related to the four kingdoms, it is quite a beautiful revelation for many people that didn't study anthroposophy. And it is very close. Sometimes when you teach in places where there's not a lot of education in many parts of the world, that people have not gone through thorough education, you find that this is so close to people when you say, well, your bones are hard. They are not as your skin, which is soft. What are the bones related to in nature? Can you observe nature? Can you see a bone and connect it through the experience of observing with a kingdom of life. And then you start building and your own image of the human being, your personal observation of the human being.
Yeah. And so I think for you, it could be interesting by asking yourself some question and studying the human being, not for itself, but actually to better understand the nature, because there is a connection, of course, to the different kingdoms, and that in this sense, the study of the human being can be a help or a little complement to get a deeper understanding of nature and the organism of the farm, actually. I always thought this, that somehow if you look at the human being, it's like you could consider it or compare it to a farm. Or wouldn't you say you have the part who are really connected to animals, and you have the part of the human being which is really connected to life forces, and then you have the part in the human being you quoted it, which is more the less living parts of the human being, the bones, but also our nervous system. And these could be, you could say, more connected to the roots, to the minerals
And how do you start when you're talking about the human being with teachers? How do you start your introduction? What do you mention? How do you bring it in a pedagogical way?
Well, everybody does it in a different way. Often I like to start to consider a machine. Well, look this car, look this tractor, look this cooking machine. Would you say it makes an evolution? No, it doesn't make an evolution. It has been produced by a human being, but then it's in the same. You need to have an input of energy, and if a piece is broken, you can replace it, but it will not by itself repair himself or go into another form of functioning. What is evolution? What is development? So we find here a first very sharp difference with the machine. And I think when we're now talking about artificial intelligence and computers, we need to really be very conscious. It seems to be that the machine can learn and develop, but it is a sort of imitation. It's not a real development. And there are researchers, Thomas Fuchs, I will give a quote and a little bit go deeper into his publications. It's very recent, of 2020. And he really says, we are thinking that there is no difference between a living organism and machine because our thinking is too dead. It's too rigid. That's why we think there's no difference. But we need really to think and to observe and to note the fundamental difference of the living being. Yes. And so to make a little bit here a difference between machine and a living being, like a plant, like an animal, like a human being. And then again to ask, well, with the animals and the plants, are they different, and which are the difference, and so on. So to really build up from the different ways of existing, the minerals, the plants, the animals, and then come at the end to the human being. And so we somehow also, we could really learn so much from you, farmers, and on this path to understand better the human being. But now we are here on the different way to say, okay, we as farmers, in order to better understand our job and better understand nature and our farm, we can also consider a little bit the human being. And perhaps this will help us.
This is very nice because, of course, as a farmer, you always want to improve yourself, to evolve, to know more, to experience more, to do things better. And of course, we use machines. And whenever a machine is not working in a farm, we are in big trouble. We need to repair it. We need to move forward. But of course, the one that is evolving in the farm is not only the human being as itself, in itself, but also in the community. So the farms are communities of human beings coming together for a high purpose of healing themselves, the earth, to redeem the earth, to move forward in evolution. There's so many tasks, but I think it's so beautiful to stop a little bit and think, what are human beings and how are they connected? And also in farming, we do a lot of teaching. It's impossible not to teach. Every time a new person comes to the farm, you even teach them this: these are the tools, this is how you use them, this is the area of work, etc. So we are also, let's say, doing a lot of pedagogy. And we can definitely learn from the way that you do pedagogy in a school. I think we will break now. This has been an introduction to our course that will be happening on Monday the 23rd. You're all invited. And we will then do another podcast to address some more questions and develop some of the ideas that you brought to us during the class or the workshop and in the Zoom. Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, and then we speak to each other on Monday.
Yes, thank you.